Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them. Above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you, my only son.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day radio show with your host, Sheldon Day. Coming to you live on Orion, Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010. Welcome to the Light of Day radio show. Well, we got a pretty rain-soaked Sonora desert here tonight. It's been raining. This is show number 28. Done 27 shows now on Orion. Been a lot happening this last week since I went off the air last weekend. Now this program, folks, is devoted to exposing the inbound passage of the Red Comet of Doom, also known as the Death Star, Nibiru, the Planet of the Crossing, the Destroyer, etc., etc. It has many names. This show is also devoted to exposing the ruling power elite's preparations for this upcoming event, which is an ongoing, recurring, predictable, cyclic event, and if you're prepared, you won't be scared. Me and my co-host John DiNardo have traditionally referred to the Death Star as Planet X. It'd probably be better if we just generically refer to it as the cosmic event, because, you know, it could end up being a rock, an asteroid, a comet, who really knows. But the fact of the matter is, folks, Planet X really is not a planet. It's a T or L class series cold brown dwarf star. I believe the name Planet X is perpetuated in order to diminutize its effectualities upon what it's going to do to the Earth and to make the topic appear as just some totally ridiculous issue. But John Morris's Planet X also has two different meanings. It means the 10th planet, and it also means, and according to Professor McCanny, an unidentified celestial object that has not been identified by the astronomical community. We're going to have our first-time guest for this program tonight, Mr. Anthony Sanchez. I believe this is the fourth radio interview he's providing to the public tonight. It has to do with explosive new revelations about the long-rumored top-secret underground facility in Dulce, New Mexico. Now, after I went off the air last week and I learned from my friend John DiNardo that there was a launch out at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and the total cost of this mission is $850 million. Just keep that in mind, folks, while I'm reading this. New satellite launches to track space junk. Space junk, folks. I think they're just laughing in our faces when they tell us stuff like this, because me and DiNardo think they're going up to look for possible the possible debris of rocks coming in as Planet X gets closer. The U.S. Air Force successfully launched the space-based space surveillance spacecraft, a first-of-its-kind satellite that can detect and track orbiting space objects from space. The new satellite was blasted into orbit by a Minotaur 4 rocket at 9:41 p.m. West Coast time on Saturday night, September 25th, from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. The space-based space surveillance spacecraft will greatly enhance our existing space situational awareness capability, a capability vital to protecting our space-based assets, said Colonel Richard Boltz from Vandenberg. This craft, folks, will greatly enhance our existing space situational awareness capability, a capability vital to protecting our space-based assets. That tells me that maybe they need to watch for stuff coming in, because maybe these rocks are going to be hitting all the satellites that are up in space. Goes on, there are about 500,000 known pieces of space junk, such as spent rocket boosters, failed satellites, and pieces of satellites in Earth orbit. Of those, about 21,000 objects are larger than 4 inches in diameter. These are being tracked by the Department of Defense as part of the Space Surveillance Network. Yeah, right, they got to have a cover in place, folks. This satellite is going to revolutionize the way we track objects in space by not being constrained by weather, the atmosphere, or the time of day, said Colonel J.R. Jordan, Vice Commander of the Space Superiority Systems Wing at the U.S. Air Force Space and Missile Systems Center in a pre-launch briefing. This capability will be essential to our space situational awareness architecture for the near future and beyond. The satellite will be fully operational and handed over to the Air Force Space Command in about 210 days. The SBSS will be able to detect, identify, and track man-made space objects from deep space to low Earth orbit. This craft, folks, will be able to detect, identify, and track man-made space objects from deep space to low Earth orbit. The SBSS space vehicle uses a two-axis gimbal in order to observe in all directions. Blah, 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 blah. $850 million mission, folks. It's quite a lot of money to be sending a spacecraft up to look for space junk, and in light of all the way the economy is going on the planet right now. I'm going to pull something else up here. You're listening to The Light of Day and Orion, Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010. Going through my email here because there's another thing I wanted to read. The break might be kicking in here any second. Let's check my program clock here. The break kicks on at about 2 minutes from now. Well, you're listening to Light of Day. This is Sheldon Day on the Ryan Talk Network. This is show number 28. I'm trying to find an email here that I believe Bill Alex sent me that I wanted to read. This is an alert being put out by the so-called Vivos Underground Shelter Company. They have an alert they're putting out to their members. Limited shelters, underground shelter space, $5,000 each. Exciting news. Vivos has just secured a massive underground shelter complex in the Central Plains area of the United States, in the state of Nebraska. Well, isn't that something, folks? That's out in the middle of the country, far away from the coastlines, if there's going to be impending tsunamis. That's just my interjection. At 137,000 square feet spanning 4 levels, this facility will be the largest Vivos shelter in North America, accommodating over 900 people for up to 1 year of autonomous underground survival. There's the break. We'll be back, folks. You're listening to The Light of Dan Orion. Here's some Paula Abdul. Do you really think it's about you when he's out? Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you on Orion Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010. Yep, we're into another brand new month. Before we know it, Christmas will be here. As a matter of fact, I already see the Christmas stuff on an advertisement at the Lowe's Home Improvement Store. Just a side note, I was talking about that launch out of Vandenberg. I have a little notepad here. I had scribbled something and I also wanted to add. That launch was a combined effort between the 30th Space Wing, Orbital Sciences Corporation, the Boeing Company, Ball Aerospace, and the Space and Missile Systems Center. That's just a little side note for that launch out of Vandenberg from Saturday night, September 25th. Back to the Vivos Underground Shelter member alert. This impressive facility in Nebraska was originally built during the Cold War to maintain communications operations for the U.S. It has been properly maintained throughout the years, and its engineering and architectural design meets or exceeds all Vivos shelter requirements. Vivos will be retrofitting and updating all of the mechanical and electronic equipment, making this what we believe to be the most resilient and substantial privately owned shelter in North America. It will also be the first Vivos shelter to come online in the early part of next year. Due to the existing infrastructure and economics of the scale of the shelter, Vivos will be passing the savings on to you, our members. Currently, we are able to offer a very limited number of spaces at just $25,000 per person with an equitable co-ownership interest for each share. Thereafter, the share price will be increased to the Vivo standard co-ownership price of $50,000. These very affordable spaces are being offered on a first-come, first-served basis to existing Vivos members only. So it goes on and on, but boy, I know one thing. I sure don't have that kind of money to be going there. You may be thinking, folks, Nebraska is just too far to get to. However, please ask yourself this question. Is my current solution, if any, better than the Vivos Nebraska shelter? The answer is almost certainly no, especially when you consider the presently reduced prices of only $25,000 per share. The radiation cloud from a nuclear explosion in the Middle East will take almost 4 days to reach the U.S. Anarchy typically erupts about 3 days following a major catastrophe. Martial law is usually implemented several days following the anarchy stage. Asteroids, solar flares, biological and chemical attacks, super volcanoes, and major earth changes will all provide some warning or notice. Vivos is not about having a 20-minute notice of a nuclear attack. In fact, if you are not already inside your shelter when a nuclear device is inbound, it's too late. But for all other scenarios, there is Vivos, the only private community shelter network in the world that will be there ready, waiting, and fully enabled for you and your loved ones. So I got that one covered. Let's see, we got 21 volcanoes across Indonesia that are ready to erupt. This is dated yesterday on the JakartaGlobe.com. 21 volcanoes across Indonesia could erupt at any time, leading to natural disasters, officials have warned. An official from the Volcanology and Geological Disaster Mitigation Agency told the Jakarta Globe on Friday that the alert for 18 volcanoes had been raised from level 1, or normal, to a level 2, or beware. Hendrasto, the head of the Volcanology and Geological Disaster Mitigation Agency, Hendrasto, the head of the PVMBG's Volcano Observation Unit, said that three other volcanoes were on level 3, or standby, just one step below the full alert, level 4. So here, one of those three is Mount Sinabung in Karo District, North Sumatra, which began erupting on August 29th after lying dormant for 400 years. Its last major eruption on September 7th spewed volcanic ash more than 5,000 meters into the atmosphere. So that could be another indicator that Planet X is indeed coming in from the south, because Indonesia is in the southern hemisphere, folks. So I'm going to close that out now. Oh, let's see. Got an email from John Moore on September 29th. about the Gulf Stream has stopped, and if anybody would like me to shoot that email to you, just requested from me at gem3intucson@q.com. Hard to tell whether this is being caused by the inbound passage of Planet X or if it is somehow related to the underwater asphalt oil volcano there in the Gulf. But you know, even if it is the underwater volcano going off in the Gulf, that may be erupting because of Planet X. I mean, it's really hard to get concrete evidence of what's going on here. Now, last Saturday night when I was doing my show, there was a United States Air Force TR-3B Triangle flying over Tucson, and there's at least five in operation as of today. I'm going to go to my notepad here to read this to you. This is a major so-called UFO sighting, but as far as I'm concerned, it was these TR-3B triangles are actually terrestrial-based technology. This was put out by Jim Wickstrom on Monday, September 27th. A TR-3B is sighted over Tucson on September 25th, over 2 years ago. In one of Jim Wickstrom's lectures, he revealed that this alleged UFO as being one of the U.S. Air Force advanced flying machines. It is called the TR-3B. There are at least five of these machines in operation today. It was manufactured in the mid-80s at Skunk Works in California. It is a dual-powered advanced flying machine that can obtain a speed of over 5,000 miles per hour in our atmosphere. I have at least seven pages of information in my files, including many pictures of this triangle flying craft. It is in the shape of a triangle, is 600 feet long down its sides and over 400 feet across the exhaust baffles in the back. The U.S. Air Force has been flying this machine, compliments of the U.S. taxpayers, for over 20 years now. For years, the U.S. military has been into areas of electromagnetic Tesla technology that far exceeds the mindset of the average citizen. They have even conquered in their quest to reduce gravity in the crew department / cockpit of up to 90% less in gravity pull. This enables this massive war machine to make maneuvers at almost direct 90-degree angles without any distress to the crew occupants of the craft. This craft can also hover over any given area for up to 2 hours without making a sound. I am sharing this information with you as for you to be able to understand that this is an Earth-made flying craft owned by the U.S. and last known by my person to be under the command of the U.S. Air Force Space Command. Apparently, those in power in Washington, D.C. feel it is time for the masses to see this 20-year-old advanced flying craft. And it goes on, talks about the major sighting of the triangle here over Tucson. We're going to bring my guest on here after this break, and then we'll have him on for about an hour or so, and then I'll finish with some more emails and articles. You're listening to The Light of Day and Orion. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Light of Day on the Orion Talk Radio Network. This is your host, Sheldon Day. We're coming live Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010. We have on the line Anthony Sanchez from California here, our first ever guest on the Light of Day radio show. I wanted to read a disclaimer before I bring him on. First of all, my interest in the underground installation in Dulce began back in probably the early 90s, maybe 1993 or 1994. I became aware of a lady named Krista Tilton who claims to have been taken to that underground facility, but she had later changed her story that it was actually the Pinal, the Evergreen Air Center facility here in Marana, Arizona. And now, after not talking to her for 15 years, I just recently talked to her a few weekends ago, and she's thinking now it might be a facility somewhere in Utah where she was actually taken to. Now, there's a number of people that have come on onto the Dulce topic over the years, and I got a email I'd like to read from Norio, just mentioning who some of these people are before we bring Anthony on. The title of the email is The Dulce Underground Base Circus by Norio Hayakawa, dated today. Let's examine some of the enigmatic personalities behind the initial rumors about the alleged Dulce base, how it all started, for example, from 1979 up until 1983. And I'm not going to read this whole email. I'll just mention some of the names of the people that have been involved in this Dulce thing. First, we have Paul Benowitz, and then Myrna Hansen, and Tom Adams, and then a lady named Ann West. And then another one, John Lear, who I find to be very credible. Tal Levesque, also known as Tal, T-A-L, or Jason Bishop. Thomas Edwin Costello, who I highly doubt has any credibility because this person apparently does not even exist. Krista Tilton is another one, like I just mentioned. And then Branton, also known as Bruce Walton. And then Gabe Valdez, who is a retired New Mexico State Patrol officer. William Bill Moore. Richard C. Doty. Now, according to the Norio, the most sane person, surprisingly, may have been Paul Benowitz himself and Gabe Valdez. It is quite possible that Mr. Benowitz had long pretended that he had been brainwashed by some within the Air Force Office of Special Investigations while he continued to conduct his own investigations into Dulce. But nevertheless, he couldn't himself overcome his growing paranoia. Another possible scenario may have been that there was a dissension among the AFOSI, and an element among the group may have provided Benowitz with some crucial information on Dulce. Now, my disclaimer here is the views expressed by my guest folks are not necessarily those of mine, and in particular, I believe that the UFO phenomena is very real, but it is being utilized by the ruling power elites to perpetrate a major deception upon the masses in the form of a staged UFO flyover or some type of fake extraterrestrial event in order to carry out some agenda, like cementing the furtherance goal of a new world order, or it may be needed to calm down the masses as Planet X gets closer because at that point, folks, they'll need some comforting or reassurance that everything's going to be all right while all these Earth cataclysms kick in the full force and effect. So we're going to bring him on now, and we'll have him on for about an hour here, and then I'll finish the show with some more emails and articles. Well, the floor is all yours, Anthony. Welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks for having me. So, thanks for having me on the show. Is there any questions that you have for me in particular? Did anybody email you anything in response to my coming on to the show with regards to Dulce or the information that I've been working on? Sheldon, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Sheldon, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
Oh, I had the mic volume down there for a second.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There's one guy up in Wisconsin in particular that wanted me to ask you some questions.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, could you just introduce yourself while I'm looking for that quick?
Yeah, so my name is Anthony Sanchez. I'm writing a book called UFO Highway. And the book is essentially three parts. And it's, I have to preface this with this bit of information. When I started writing this book initially, it had nothing to do with Dulce. I had no intentions of writing about Dulce. I had no interest in Dulce. I had always worked on this transformation hypothesis, which has to do with alien-human hybridization with regards to human origins, and that was like a big thing for me. And I also did a lot of work on the HARP and Project Bluebeam connection, the conspiracy there. And that was going to be the basis of my book. Also, I was going to do a profile on triangle UFOs from Murrysville, Pennsylvania, and here in California in Triangle Valley. And, you know, lo and behold, I ended up meeting the Jeff Gonzalez from MUFON, who was in the Central Valley, which is at the southern tip of the Triangle Valley, and started doing the independent investigation of a triangle UFO that had been sighted in the area there. Anyhow, January of this year, one of my contacts who worked in the military-industrial complex contacted me and said there was a gentleman who was interested in meeting with me. They had some very, very interesting information that they wanted to share. What triggered his interest in me was some of the work that I had done on this alien-human hybridization information that I had posted on my blog. And we met. First we talked by cell phone. And then once I realized what it was he wanted to talk about, we met in person. And his story is an amazing story, and it's about Dulce. And I've known about the other stories that are out there, you know, from like Branton and, you know, Jason Bishop. And you know, I even went to John Rhodes' website, reptoids.com. You know, this is like a year or more ago, you know, and I read, I guess it was a brief synopsis he had there about Dulce. So I knew, I was familiar with the story, but I wasn't heavily interested in the story. So this is all brand new for me. I've essentially been studying Dulce for 9 months now, and that's it. And what I really want to throw out there for everybody to kind of digest is this whole Dulce interview has overtaken all other aspects of my book. I was for certain, absolutely certain, that the HARP and Project Bluebeam conspiracy was going to be the crux of my book. That's what was going to gain the most interest from the public. But when Frank Warren of the UFOChronicles.com, you know, put a little snippet out there on his website, which is extremely popular, I just got inundated with information requests from people. You know, I got contacted immediately by Lee Spiegel from AOL News. I got contacted by, some of your fellow journalists, podcast hosts like Jerry Pippin, Mel Fabregas. Just yesterday I was interviewed on the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien. And so this whole Dulce thing has just really, really taken off. People are so interested in the subject, and I can understand why. There's such an enigmatic aspect to the whole Dulce story. If you saw that episode with the UFO hunters, where they talk about this firefight that took place there. What an interesting concept, you know. That is something alone that's just going to get your attention and hold you captivated because of the sheer fact that somebody
is
claiming.
We got the break, Anthony.
Yep, okay.
Stay tuned, folks.
folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day and Orion with your host, Shaolin Day. Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010, we have the underground Dulcie bass expert, or one of them, say Anthony Sanchez, here on the line. Anthony, I don't even know what you were talking about when we went into the break. Do you?
Yeah, so essentially I was telling people that, you know, the whole concept of this base existing there underneath the Archuleta Mesa, the plateau, is just a very, very captivating and enigmatic subject. And there have been a lot of stories, you know, circulating with regards to Dulcie. And but in January, you know, I met this retired United States Air Force colonel who has his own story, and it's just as captivating, it's just as mysterious and interesting, and there's a lot of evidence that I have that lends me to believe that this is real, that there is something there in Dulcie. And I for the longest time didn't believe there was anything there in Dulcie. I had always believed that there was an underground, you know, complex in Manzano as part of the nuclear storage facility. I even bought into the S-4 facility in Area 51 with regards to Bob Lazar. But I had never really latched on to the whole concept of Dulcie because there just wasn't, you know, that much evidence out there other than these you know, really, really interesting stories with regards to Thomas Edwin Castello, the whole reptilian aspect. Now, that was all, you know, out there, but I just never bought into it because it just didn't appeal to me. It wasn't something that I was interested in. I was more interested in HARP and Project Bluebeam and alien and human, you know, hybridization. Those were the areas that I really, really focused on. So, but now I'm a believer. I'm a believer in Dulcie. I did research. I made phone calls. I sent letters. I filed forms with the federal government, and the types of responses that I received tell me that there's something there, and it's classified, and I'm not supposed to be looking into it. So that's where I am right now with this whole thing, Sheldon. So, you said, Sheldon, that you had a gentleman who had a question for me. What was that question?
Yeah, I had a few here. If you could pretty much just reply yes or no to him, that would be fine, because he's got five here, and I don't want
to
spend too much time. But this is from John up in Milwaukee. He's a fellow Planet X researcher friend of mine. He wants to know, one, is there any underground tunnels that link from Colorado to New Mexico? I've heard about this when living in Colorado.
You know, if you go to my website, ufohighway.com, there's a link there called Top Secret. When you click on that link, there's a map. And the map shows the Denver International Airport, Colorado.
Right.
And NORAD. And those two facilities, it's speculated that there are underground, you know, shuttle systems going from both NORAD and Denver International to Dulcie, to Los Alamos, to Area 51, Edwards Air Force Base. So I would say yes on that. You know, is there definitive proof? The only proof that I have is, again, you know, comes from my source, this colonel, who is telling me that there is a massive underground, you know, shuttle, you know, rail system throughout the entire Southwest, even extending out to the East Coast. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that there is something like that, yeah.
How about of any underground bases in Wisconsin that the guest knows of? Fort McCoy is a given, which has a deep underground base. Would he know about that?
He would probably know about it, but we never spoke about it. The only underground complex that we spoke about at detail was we spoke about Raven Rock, Mount Weather, Perry, Mount Pony, Manzano, China Lake, Groom Lake, and north of Pico Rivera, the Tehachapi. Those were some of the ones that we talked about, And as a matter of fact, there was another one that we spoke about, which was in the Chengdu district of China, which is like essentially the Area 51 of China, where there's a massive underground complex that's used for military purposes there. But I know that throughout North America, as part of the military establishment, there are bases, underground bases, throughout the entire country. And it would not surprise me that there would be one there in Wisconsin.
Okay, another one. A couple years ago, a British Special Forces unit got into trouble with authorities in Mexico for snooping around a deep underground cave. The story was never heard of again. Does the guest know any more to this story? What were they looking for?
No, I am not familiar with that story.
Okay, and the last question, does the guest know anything about secret digs in the South Pole? A lot of secret goings on there.
You know, I once came across a forum online where it was of a scientific nature, and I overheard a conversation, an ongoing conversation, where they were mentioning archaeological digs there in Antarctica, and that the government, that the United States government had, I think it was Russia, were both heavily invested in these archaeological digs that were taking place there, possibly ties to earlier civilizations. I don't know the facts, but I remember reading something to that effect, yes.
Well, that's his questions. I think the most interesting thing going on at the South Pole would be the deployment of the South Pole Telescope 3 years ago, which is being used to supposedly track the incoming passage of Planet X, because it's the southernmost location to be at, plus they can use their infrared equipment, which they need to see Planet X, and it's extremely cold down there, so that makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, that would make sense.
What are your thoughts about Planet X, Anthony?
Well, excuse me, I got a little bit of a cold there.
Sure.
I'm sort of 50-50 on Planet X. I didn't do a lot of research on Planet X. So I'm not really, well-versed in Planet X. But if there is something to that effect, forthcoming, which a lot of people believe, excuse me, I would suspect that there would be some type of preparation on the part of the government with regards to making sure that there is some type of continuity of government in place if there were to be any type of catastrophic events occurring because of such a planet coming within a close proximity to Earth, tectonic plate displacement or massive tsunamis. I mean, who knows? I'm not an expert in that area because I never really studied up on Planet X, but I do think that there would definitely be something in place with regards to continuity of government because of the fact that something like that could really have an effect on all of us.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We're going to be coming into a long top of the hour break here. I'll just keep you patched into the stream so you can hear what's, the commercial going on. And when we come back, maybe you could get into deeper about this these revelations by Colonel X, like the stuff that was found there and the actual name of the base and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's touch on that.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating revelation that Anthony's come across, folks. I actually got an alert from Nori Hayakawa that this was going to be put out on the Jerry Pippen Show, and I listened to it, and I've never heard of this Mr. Anthony Sanchez until I heard this interview a few nights ago. So
cool.
Well, you're listening to The Light of Day. We're going to be coming in the top of the hour break, which is a long one. We're this Saturday night, October 2nd, 2010. By the way, Anthony has a link of my website on his website. If you folks want to go and check his website out, it's UFOHighway.com. And anything else until the break here, Anthony?
The one thing that I did find interesting about Planet X, as I remember in January of 2008, there was this beautiful aurora borealis, you know, the northern light over Scandinavia. There had been, like, some solar wind activity, and there were these sun coronal holes. And I remember that somebody had took a photograph.
You'll have to mention that again after the break.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Well, we'll be back, folks. Stay tuned.